you know, survey your landscape. Who in your orbit would also, you know, could be not just somebody that say, yeah, it's a great idea, but they could also validate it to the point that they would participate in whatever it was.
Welcome to WorkWise, the growth mindset for wisdom at work. I'm Ken Kennard of Accent Interactive, and my co-host is Mike Boys of Credo Consulting. In this episode, we speak with Dr. Chip Roper, the Director of Marketplace Engagement at the New York City Leadership Center. The Leadership Center works with churches and other faith-based organizations to catalyze leaders to impact cities. We invited Chip on the podcast to talk about collaboration, something he does full-time in a high-stakes environment at the intersection of nonprofit and business. So tell us more about what you're doing in New York City and what is the Leadership Center all about?
I'll start with the Leadership Center. Essentially, we foster collaboration and the embrace of best practices among faith-based leaders in New York City, especially pastors and nonprofit organization leaders. And the hope and the dream is that by connecting them with each other and training them to be more effective, that it will accelerate the impact of the gospel on the city. And kind of one of our working assumptions is if you impact New York City, you actually impact the world.
Yeah.
It's such an influential and central place.
Yeah, that's great. And this topic of collaboration, we wanted to talk about this today because collaboration is the new mindset for how we do work, certainly in America, and I think all over the world. And I think that's because the world requires it. We've solved a lot of the basic problems, and our work is moving towards more of a people-based economy. We're done with the manufacturing in a lot of ways. America went through manufacturing. We went through the service economy, and then technology came, and we hit the information economy, and that requires people to use their brains. We're solving problems together. We're collaborating to do those things, and it requires a whole new way of interacting to get things done. And I think it also, you know, what's happening is that we're moving even from, some would argue, moving from the information age to the creativity age. So everyone has the information now. It's free.
Right.
It's what do we do with it? How do we solve problems with this? And the problems we're tackling these days are so big and complex that they require collaboration. And so it's the new way to work.
Well, I'm curious about that, if you guys could speak to that, because I've heard that, but I'm wondering what evidence is there really that we're moving into this collaboration mindset? Is it just little pockets? Do we see it across the board? What do you guys see as collaboration really, you know, becoming the way work gets done?
Mm-hmm. I think it depends, of course, right? There's caveats for everything. But I think at least in terms of the faith community in New York City, particularly the Manhattan-facing segment of it, you know, the realization dawned on some faith leaders in the late 70s and early 80s that the problems of New York were just too big for any single organization, even a national organization, to tackle alone. And that really validates Mike's hypothesis, you know, that increasing complexity drives collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you just look around to some of the new products out, we look here in our hometown of Baltimore, the biggest thing going business-wise is Under Armour, right? And now I think they're collaborating with IBM to use Watson, their smart computer, to create apps and smart wear to up the ante on how you exercise and get real-time information that you can analyze and study on your actions. So here we have a sports garment company that's now collaborating with IBM for make their products high tech. And I think that's, you know, part of it's market driven in terms of if you want to keep on generating revenues and, you know, and improve your product, you're looking to other people with other expertise. You're looking for new problems to solve that are outside your area and coming together. And that's what I think businesses are doing everywhere.
The open source approach to building products and services, which is, you know, drives Mozilla and Firefox and, you know, the whole idea of a hackathon, which is big in the tech sector. They're ways that collaboration is almost becoming institutionalized. I mean, it is the way.
Yeah.
In some of those spaces.
Yeah. And I think as I look into organizations and work with them, you know, teamwork or collaboration is highly prized everywhere now. I did some work in the intelligence community a little while ago, for example, and the world has become so complex that they've had to change the structure of how they manage. You know, in years past, even in the intelligence community, it was pretty hierarchical. You had rules to follow. You had certain roles to play, and you had to approve things to your bosses. And now what they're doing, at least the organization I worked with, was trying to create a container for like their first and second line workers, high capacity people who are dealing in a very complex world. And they're just trying to create a container for them to work effectively in that, let them do their thing. And then they're piling their bureaucracy on top of that, because they know if they put the bureaucracy within that, it won't be effective. And this is a new challenge for them, because they got so much coming at them. How do you make sense of this crazy world we're in? And it's not just intelligence community, it's everywhere.
Well, it seems to me like maybe we should define what we mean by collaboration, or maybe there's different kinds of collaboration, because it seems to me that companies have always worked with other companies. So it's not unusual for a company to partner with another company and put together a joint product or a complementary service or things like that. So I guess that just doesn't seem new enough to me to make a big deal about it. What's new about what's going on in collaboration? Why are we focusing on this now?
So my take on it is, it's one thing to partner with a company to do something, to get something done together. It's another thing when you start joint problem solving with them, and you're passing information back and forth, and you have joint control of the project and the work and the problem solving between the people in the company, as opposed to we're gonna form a partnership here, and you do our work, and we do, I give you special favors or whatever. But this is where we're problem solving together. We have control of the work, and we wind up defining the parameters of what's going on, and you release control of that to people and let them figure it out. And that's a different kind of thing altogether.
Is that what you're seeing in your work, Chip, in terms of joint control, joint problem solving, kind of we're both in this together?
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that gets at something that's distinct. I mean, like almost every sector, the faith community tends to be very siloed. And but like a true collaborative effort, to me, it's got an ongoing nature to it, like Mike was saying. And it's definitely problem oriented. There's a helpful piece that that Stanford's put out, and they have five characteristics of collaboration, and one has to do with the first characteristic is that a group has a shared definition of a problem, and then they have a shared metrics that they all agree to, then they each have an individual contribution that fits with their own mission, and then they communicate at a senior level very, very regularly. So yeah, it's beyond a project, or it's beyond awareness. It's let's roll up our sleeves, let's do this together, and you know, it's more of an ongoing reality.
That seems to me like it would be fraught with some real challenges, because these organizations are not designed for collaboration. It seems to me like you don't start your business around this idea that you're going to contribute to someone else's project or jointly contribute to their project, right? Don't these individual organizations have their own mission, their own vision, their own set of skills? Aren't their core competencies really then tailored around that? And don't they really need to be responsible? I mean, especially in the faith community, to their donors and contributors, to accomplish the mission that they were setting out to accomplish, not some other, you know, joint partnership mission?
I think it's a tension. It is. I think you're pointing up a real tension. And like everything else, collaboration can just become sort of another buzzword and another campaign. Sometimes our CEO, Mac Peer, likes to use the terminology of intelligent collaboration, meaning that, you know, you find ways together for each individual entity to advance its own mission while they advance the whole. And I would even suggest that collaboration, even though it's more a little bit longer term than a project, it's probably temporary. You know, when the problem is solved, or when the organization's mature, a lot of times it goes away. You know,
Yeah, I think that goes back to the article you referenced, the study at Stanford, and what they came up with. And the two first things in that list were common agenda and shared measurement systems, right? And so what you're doing when you're creating a common agenda is you're then taking those interests that those organizations have and how they define their mission, right? And saying, you know what, we have a common mission. What's our common mission? So we fill this role or purpose in the world in order to get this larger outcome. So, and by the way, oh gosh, you guys over here, this other company, you have another role that is in service to this greater mission. And so let's look at the greater mission and figure out how we're both contributing. And instead of stepping on each other's toes and competing for space and money and acting independently, why don't we look at this and say, hey, we're, you know, there's a partnership here in doing this. We each have our place. And if we put our minds and efforts together and then we define success the same way and we measure it the same way, then we start working towards the same thing. It's what unifies people. And they have to have enough shared interest and vision to come together. And the question is, you know, one of the big questions in collaboration, I think, is, well, what helps us to see and is going to motivate us to like step back from our invested interests and look at this bigger goal and go, yeah, oh my gosh, we have the same thing in mind. Why don't we figure out how we leverage each other? Would you agree, Chip?
Yeah, I think the answer to the question you just raised is relationship.
Mm-hmm.
People have to know each other and trust know each other well enough to trust each other to be able to even have that conversation.
Mm.
And which is hard, you know, because you're sort of starting from a place where your natural disposition is to view others in your space as competitors, and which in fact, and they very well may be. There's a very interesting example of healthy collaboration here in New York City between a number of organizations that serve the homeless. And there's around 100,000 homeless people in New York City. It's beyond the capacity of the city government to handle it, even though they do a lot with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some really effective Christian ministries, faith-based ministries that are serving the homeless have existed for many, many years. So three of them in particular and some others are part of a collaborative group, the New York City Rescue Mission, the Bowery Mission, and the Relief, and an organization or effort called the Relief Bus. And one of the things that they found is that they have complementary capacities and strengths. So the Relief Bus does immediate rescue, sort of immediate relief of needs for food and shelter. It's actually literally a group of buses. They have a fleet of buses that go around different parts of the city and meet people where they are. The Bowery and the Rescue Mission are more facilities-based. The Rescue Mission tends to be sort of that second step in a process of rehabilitating a person. They have long-term residents, and they have some programs there. And then the Bowery specializes in rehabilitation and reaching whole families. And so they've through relationship of their senior leaders, they have come to understand. I mean, they all agree on the problem. It's homelessness,
right?
And they want to find a long-term solution. They don't just want to put a Band-Aid on it. And they see that they can work together, and
right.
So it works, and it continues to go on. Right. But one of the things that's interesting, even in that, which goes back to Ken's point. Is that there still is almost this tension of, well, if we're all so complementary, you know, should we stay independent in organizations or should we merge? And, you know, so there's that thing. I still just go back to the idea. I think it's hard for just independent organizations to collaborate indefinitely.
You know, right.
If it's really, really good, maybe they just become one big organization. And if it's not, or if the project, you know, the goal is met, the problem is solved, or at least a big dent is made in it,
yeah,
then they go back to their functioning more individually.
Yeah. I'd like to explore just maybe different hypothetical ways that those three entities could work together that fall short of collaboration.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
And then what collaboration might look like between them, right? So if I could share my thoughts on that. So a cooperative effort, recognizing that they have common interests, would be that, you know, we agree that you're going to bring people here on your bus, right? And we agree that we're going to refer people from the residential kind of facilities to the next step, to the, or the family system, right? And get them to get that involved. And we're going to recommend, and we might even call over and say that we have these people we'd like to help get over to your system. That might be a cooperation, right? A collaboration, I think, might come in when we say, you know, maybe what we need to do is we need to have a coordinate our schedules, right? And so you're going to go out looking for people, and then we're going to have the beds ready, and we're going to get together and say we're expecting an influx or a big boom here. And so let's create a system together to make sure we handle this. And maybe we create a pull-up spot and parking spots for the bus. And maybe what we do is, you know, we take people from the Bowery and we put them on the bus to start talking to people and introduce them to where they're going. And so we start problem solving together, and we set goals. We say, you know, we're gonna be able to house and process, I don't know, 60,000 people a year. Well, how many buses would you need? Where would you have to park them? You know, and so we start looking at this and setting joint goals and saying, how can we as a three different entities or four different entities cooperate and work together to solve that problem? Yeah. That to me, I think, draws a distinction.
Yeah, that's a great distinction. It seems to me if you made that step from just merely cooperating to really collaborating, then my staff kind of becomes an extension of your staff, because we're not only solving the same problem, but we're coordinating our efforts. Mm-hmm. So I might be riding on your bus, or my staff might be taking a trip on your bus to go pick up the people and bring them. And that it starts to blur the lines between which organization am I really working for here?
Right. And we're working together to create processes, procedures, and systems that make the bridge between our two organizations.
So maybe I have a suggestion for the way your organization could improve to serve the goal, because I see things a little differently.
And I think I might say more than a suggestion. Yeah. I'd say that I have responsibility, and then we create a venue for solving those problems together.
And it's, I mean, in this example, they do have a cooperative effort, and I'm honestly not privy enough to the inner workings to know exactly how all this goes, but they do have a cooperative effort every February. It's called, it's like Leave Nobody Behind. It's kind of a Leave No One Behind campaign, and they canvass the city, and they, you know, enlist a lot of churches and other volunteers to make sure no one's left out in the street that will be able to come in. And that's more cooperative as opposed to collaborative. And I would even suggest that there's two other layers before that, before cooperative effort. One is just awareness. And I'm part of a men's group of leaders that meets monthly, and we just get all the nonprofit leaders we can together just to tell everybody else what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because there's a lack of awareness. I mean, people don't know. And it's true in any I mean, in any industry, you know who the big players are. You might not know who the people are. You know the companies. But it's where things like chambers of commerce and other industry groups can just to raise awareness. And then a step beyond awareness are what are called communities of practice, which are a group in the same field who they're not ready to even cooperate, but they're willing to learn together. And they collaboratively set an agenda and say, hey, well, we could take our homeless organizations, and they could say, we really want to bring in national experts on, you know, what's the best way to really make a long-term dent in a homeless population? What's the best way to really rehabilitate people? So together, we're going to learn about that.
Right.
So they're learning, but they're not saying, here's the problem we're going to solve together, or here's an effort where we can all cooperate. But it could lead to that. And it helps build trust. That's probably one of the biggest barriers to collaboration is trust.
Yeah. And you know, when you pull people together like that and they start getting awareness, that's a huge benefit. You see that even in internal organizations all the time. Different departments doing different things, or just being a building away or whatever. There's always a barrier. I have no idea what's going on over there because I'm focused on my problems. I'm a busy person. I have already to do. I'm swimming, you know, in trying to keep afloat in all the stuff I have to do. And then keeping aware of knowing what's going on somewhere else is so hard. Now you're crossing organizations. And you might say, oh, yeah, I know they're there, but do you really know what's going on? And so people hear that, and they're like, oh, that's really interesting. And we could do that, or we could add to that. And they start moving together. They start looking at how they can do that. In the community of practice, it gets even deeper, right, with that. As you said, Chip, that's the beginning of trust. You start rubbing elbows together, and they do that for a little while, and they can't help but say, let's do something. And they start measuring each other up to see, well, gosh, can I do something with this person?
Yeah. And I'm curious about your work, Chip, in terms of the New York City Leadership Center. Like, I know you're trying to get collaboration going. In some cases, you're trying to build communities of practice. In some cases, you already have those relationships of trust, but you're trying to move together on this common agenda. Can you speak to some of the things that you've been personally working on there, and how that's going?
Well, so my focus is on equipping people to connect their faith with their work, and to see that as a place that God cares about and has a positive agenda for. And that, and really, at the end of the day, that's going to require at least some cooperation, if not collaboration. Because like many cities, and maybe even more so, New York is a place where people commute. And the business environment here is very demanding. So the typical suburban church has very little to offer or very little capacity to serve their population that commutes to work in the city. And that's where we can work together. And it starts with awareness, as I said. And so we'll host a breakfast or a lunch or something like that with leaders, whether they're pastors or people in the marketplace. And then, hopefully it's going to build from there in terms of being able to say, how can we address this isolation that many people experience on a day-to-day basis collaboratively? You know, how can we work together on that? So that would be, it's at the embryonic beginning stages of that, the work that I'm doing in that space. And the other thing that we do is we have a gathering every year. It's called Movement Day, the idea of a spiritual movement, catalyzing a spiritual movement. And we plan that collaboratively, which would be more on the project side, as opposed to, maybe it's cooperative, as opposed to, we see a real problem. But there's a group of leaders, there's five of us that work together to put on that marketplace experience, that segment, that theme in it. And so we work together all year, lots of conference calls, and we divvy out the tasks, and we each, so it's in some ways, it's where each of our organizations is lending us to that project.
Right.
And so that's another example of how that works.
And it strikes me when you say that, Chip, that really you're helping people to fulfill, what God has asked us to do, and how he's told us, what he's told us we are as different parts of the body, right? And the eye cannot say to the ear, I don't need you. In fact, it needs you very desperately in order to function as the global church. Then we need to function as the global church, as we need hands, we need feet, we need eyes, we need stomachs, we need lungs. None of it works without each other. And it seems to me that you're helping to pull the body parts together.
That's a great metaphor.
So, yeah. Chip, what do you see are the challenges getting in the way of that? Like, what do you wish you could see happen in terms of the way that collaboration is starting to build?
Well, I think the reality is that people don't get up in the morning thinking, "Who can I collaborate with today?" they don't do that. I don't either.
That's new.
They wake up thinking, and this is all the things I've got to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And they wake up just, you know, dealing with, and if they're the leader of an organization, it kind of goes back to some things that Ken was saying earlier. I mean, they do have a, you know, they have a relational, maybe spiritual fiduciary responsibility for that organization. So I think that, I mean, the way to summarize it is collaboration is not necessarily a top of mind concern for most people. And so there has to be some sense, really, frankly, there's got to be some pain that will motivate people to open their eyes to who else might be doing something that's complementary. How can we work together? That is, has been true here in this, in New York City. There was so much pain. There was so much ineffectiveness in the Christian ministry space that it just drove people together.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what I'm seeing when I get in front of a pastor or a business person is that there is pain. And pastors do feel at times that they're not really reaching their people. They're not really connecting with the lives that where the people with, they're not really able to help people with where they live. I know people who work demanding jobs, doesn't matter whether it's white or blue collar, often feel that ministry professionals don't understand their world at all. So there's pain on both sides. But again, even that, it just takes that chance, that opportunity to start to talk about it. But without without the reality of that pain to push change, it's very difficult.
So, you know, I'm thinking a lot of things when you say that. And I think that at the spiritual level, I think that maybe a broader definition of pain would be how critical the mission is. Right, pain is one way to make something urgent and make it critical and drop all other priorities. And I think that the mission of spreading the gospel, knowing where people, you know, what happens to people when they die, you know, are they bound for heaven? Are they bound for hell? Is if you're thinking about that and have compassion for people, that's on your mind, then it becomes urgent. It's a pain that you can't bear, and it focuses who you are. Right. And I think that's where, you know, we're warned about letting the worries of the world strangle us out, right? And I also thought about the collaborative thing. I tell people when they have bad bosses, you know, that do they wake up in the morning thinking, I want to be a mean, nasty person today and selfish and micromanage? No, they don't. But they're not necessarily thinking about, how do I make my employees' day fantastic? How do I help them to thrive today? In the same way, I think there's a mindset there. So people don't, as you say, they don't wake up thinking, let's be collaborative, woohoo! What if they did? What if they had the pain on their minds? And what if they thought the only way to do this, the only way to solve these huge problems, is by finding other people to be in it with who have different gifts and have different focuses, and we have to do that. So changing that mindset seems to me to be part of the equation.
And I'm thinking about the person who is listening to the collaborative conversation and says, well, you know, the pains that I'm dealing with are pretty small compared to that. Right. Maybe I'm playing a pretty small game, you know, and I'm solving small problems in a small way that an organization can solve pretty easily without a lot of this kind of, you know, external reaching and work and stuff like that. Collaboration seems like a pretty, it's only needed for the big problems, the urgent things, the stuff that really matters, right?
Yeah. But that is where people fall in their work. It's the leader's job to continually point to what's important about our work. What are we trying to achieve? How it relates to our identity. And that goes to having a shared identity, which is what the common agenda does. And right. The shared measurements is, what's our shared identity? What are we trying to accomplish? Why is this important? Keeping them excited and interested in that. And then realizing that, you know what? People depend on me because we are so tied together. That's part of the leader's job. And you're right, it's not as urgent, and it falls away when they're not in crisis. But when people are in crisis, oh, you know, they move towards it because everything else falls and fades into the background.
And it's, I mean, it's so it's so it's a couple things. One part of it is having collaboration in your toolbox and understanding that there are going to be certain situations, whether it's in your internally and the danger of internal silos, or it's going to be externally, where you're going to need collaboration is going to be the right play. And so you need to understand that. You need to become aware of that. It's also reminding people that collaboration is not always the right play. You know, it's not the answer to everything.
Yeah.
But there's going to be certain things that are either, you know, they're too complex, they're too broad, or the challenge you're facing is too sick. You know, you just can't do it on your own. It takes humility to be willing to do that, though, to be really acknowledge that. And in the illustration of that I'm in my work, so it takes humility for, say, a suburban pastor to recognize, I'm not going to be able to provide everything that my people need for their spiritual care. You know, my best approach, maybe for some of my men, especially that go into the city every day, is to introduce them to a men's group that I feel good about. That takes humility. And it's also somewhat of a risk, organizationally. So that's another, you know, we talked about pain being required for collaboration, and I think humility might be another one. But the other is just recognizing that the other side of this is recognizing that it's not always the answer.
No.
And
And
I'm not sure anything is.
And I agree. And there's a lot to explore there. Let's talk about what we saw last night between the hours of 6:30 and 10:30. That was the Super Bowl number 50.
I saw chicken wings and a beer. I don't know if I'm allowed to say beer on your podcast, but I saw beer. Some other things.
Chippy Kenzie.
Marinated olives, too. They were really good.
Look, you can say beer, but if we're talking the Super Bowl, apparently the only beer you can drink is Budweiser. Because
I've got no comment about that.
Yeah, I was dumbfounded when Peyton Manning twice commented that not only was he going to have a beer and drink lots of it, but that he was going to have Budweiser. And I couldn't help but notice that Bud was one of the sponsors.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, really?
Yeah, it might be a little tarnish on his image. I don't know.
I thought, what are you doing, Peyton? But so what did all the commentators say about Peyton Manning afterwards?
Well, everybody talks about how much of a team player he is.
Yep.
And actually, I noted both in his pregame statement and afterwards, you know, just how complimentary he is to his team. And you know, the story of his season this year, where he had to learn a new system of an offense, he was out for an injury, and even in the game, I mean, it was great. I was rooting for him, because I wanted him to go out with a win.
Me too.
Probably his last game, but it wasn't a very glorious finish in the sense that he wasn't throwing these amazing passes. They just played sort of they let the defense in a sense win the game for them, and they played a very, very cautious offense, which didn't necessarily highlight his best strengths or bring him the most glory as a quarterback. And he wasn't the MVP of the game.
No.
So I think it's really, really, it's very instructive. Mm-hmm. At least I would say that humility that's required to collaborate, you know, and a very different personality and way of being than Cam Newton, who's flash and dash, you know, and a very, very different.
Yeah.
Very different.
Ken, did you watch the game?
Yeah, I noticed that Cam, I was trying to get in the mindset of Cam as the game was going on. It wasn't going well for them, and I was trying to figure out how was he going to respond to that. And what I noticed is that he seemed to take the game on his shoulders as a solution. Like, he would run with the ball as a strategy. And that can be very successful. It can be a part of a team strategy. But it seemed like the opposite of the strategy that won the game, which was to depend depending more on the team aspect.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, in defense of Cam, I think that last night in particular, he didn't have options. That was part of the deal. he's been noted that this year especially he's learned to sit in the pocket and be content to throw the ball, and they use his running as an aspect of a scheme. But he just didn't have anybody to go to most of the time. And so in his defense last night, I don't think he had a choice. I think that, you know, one of the things people remarked on Peyton Manning was, first of all, he never could do it with his legs. So he never had a choice but to throw the ball. but all the commentators just talked about what a class act he is and always has been. And they specifically noted his humility, because all season he's pointed to the defense and he said, these are the guys that did it. They commented that he's been a great piece this year, especially since, because he realized that it wasn't on his shoulders and that he was happy to give the glory to the people who need it. He's been saying, we're on a journey together. We're in this together. And he's never for a moment said or portrayed that it was about him and it was all on him. And so I think people saw his humility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's kind of like a team mindset, we could say, or a right. collaboration mindset that someone brings to this that really helps make it work.
Humility is required. It's required, I think. I think Chip got a great point that when people are not humble, then it makes collaboration very difficult, because they want to be in control. They want to have the power. They want to have the limelight. When they think they can do it by themselves, it doesn't, there's no reason to go outside yourself if you can have all those things, right? Right. What about that control thing?
What about it?
Well, it strikes me that I think that a person's desire for control and the things that the good things that come with control might be an obstacle for collaboration.
Well, control is what gets rewarded. Like if something's going well, who do you reward? You reward the person or the people that had control over that thing, right? Mm-hmm. So to give up control and yet to be a part of a team, it's sort of like, well, where's the reward in that? If you're looking for personal glory, then
or credit,
then you're not going to get much in a situation where you didn't really have much control, or where the control was so shared that your piece of it is really pretty small. And that gets back to the humility, and who wants that?
Right.
And I would throw a couple things in here on that. First of all, I think, that's true. And are you building your own personal brand, so to speak? And that's true in any space. It doesn't matter whether it's business or nonprofit or church. Are you building your personal brand, or are you more committed to organizational results, which gets into Patrick Lencioni's 5 dysfunctions of a team, the highest level of focus for a team is on results, not on individual success. And that dovetails with Jim Collins' level 5 leader. And it's the same idea. And, so in a football game, do you want your team to win, or do you want to be a rock star? So it's that kind of question. And sometimes you can do both, but sometimes you can't. And Peyton was a great example of somebody that said, "Well, I'm not going to be the rock star tonight, or even really the postseason. But I want my team to win." But back to collaboration, I think just a thought that struck me as you guys were talking is, what's the difference between internal collaboration in an organization and then interagency or intercompany collaboration? I think most of us would agree it's probably an easier sell to say that every organization, internally, we need to share the right information. We need to work together. It's part of our team winning, so to speak. But then, part of what we're saying perhaps is that we're actually calling people to even a higher layer or higher level of saying, well, it's not just about our organization succeeding. It's about our industry succeeding, or this group of organizations that's trying to tackle the same problem. For example, the homeless thing, succeeding. And I think that's even a step further in terms of maybe the level of humility that's required.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's a sense of responsibility as well that for organizations, that they are not just responsible for shareholder returns, not just responsible for increasing shareholders' wealth, that they're not just responsible for creating their good, but there's a responsibility to their community as corporate leaders, as people who have power, to give back and to be corporate citizens and to take that seriously. They have the position and the resources and the skills to focus on important things happening in their communities.
That was sort of illustrated in the game. I just picked up on, I think it was one of the Panthers players was out because of a concussion, and that the NFL's recognized this is an issue. This is a problem. Players getting concussions, and so they've created a concussion protocol, and it's the teams aren't going to share intel on a lot of things because they want to beat each other, but on something like that, which is a shared problem, they actually do. They actually do follow the same protocols.
Yeah.
They do the same approach to a problem. Yeah. I'm sure they would share, if somebody from the other team was hurt and the other team's trainer was needed, they would go. You see examples like that. So that's kind of, in many ways, they face each other as competitors, but in some ways, in specific circumstances, they actually collaborate.
Yeah. I'm alarmed at what's happening in our society. I've read some research that a woman's been doing, and I apologize if I forget her name, but she's been looking at data we've collected from freshmen since the year I graduated. Since the year I was a freshman, 1982 to 2012. And over that span of time, she found that the number of students who meet the clinical definition of narcissistic personality disorder has doubled from 15% to 30%.
Wow.
Another woman looking at the same data set, looking at other markers on it, has found that markers of empathy for people has decreased by 40 percentage points. And so I think that we're now in a world where people say it's all about me. Their identity's me taking care of me, furthering my needs. And in order to get out of yourself, you need to see other people's needs. You need to see that it's not about you. And I think how we look at ourselves and how we identify ourselves is an issue of collaboration. And we reward people. People walk around wearing shirts that say, "It is all about me. I am the queen bee. Talk to the hand."
Yeah.
One of my friends just died in the last week or two, and it's gotten me thinking about what you're speaking here about this idea that what's the impact that we're having? Do we care about our personal glory, or do we care about how better off the world is? And as we were reflecting on his life, it seemed to me that our small community, places where he is personally known and has an opportunity for glory, we certainly lost a great contributor there. But I feel like the even bigger impact on his life was for the larger, not organization, but like society. He was busy trying to find a cure for cancer, doing cancer research, and the people that spoke to his life just talked about the impact that has had on so many different medical things. And so, part of it is he's doing important work, but I think the way he's doing the work is what really spoke to me and is really caused me to think about, maybe my vision's a little small sometimes for, what I could be caring about. And if I really had a bigger passion for the larger society, as opposed to just a small team, how would I be living differently? And how would I be working differently? And how would I be waking up in the morning differently with a bit of a different mindset?
Yeah, it's seeing the wider community as a stakeholder in what you're doing. Or in biblical terms, it's expanding your sense of who is my neighbor, right. How you answer that question.
Yeah. So giving leadership to a collaborative effort means casting that vision, doesn't it? And finding people who have that vision in their bellies but haven't been able to connect with people who have the vision. And that's what takes us out of our pettiness, I think, is having a grander, bigger vision for what needs to happen.
Yeah, and I still would say it's tricky. I wouldn't want to label everybody who doesn't collaborate as narcissistic, and I'm not saying saying that, Mike. But I just don't think it's that simple. You know, I think, again, it's sort of like, so some people are narcissistic, some people are others-oriented in the whole, you know, and then some people collaborate and some people make more of an individual contribution. And it's, you know, you can make a, you draw your four quadrants and you net it out, you know, and there's probably narcissistic collaborators, you know, and that's certainly not what we're advocating.
Where are they?
Well, we could, you know, maybe one of our action items from this podcast is to form the collaboration police. Because we want people to wake up in the morning thinking about it, and we want to make sure that none of the narcissists get into the club. So we'll figure that out.
Well, if we can convert them, if there's a good chance of them converting, maybe we'll let them in. You know, into converting in either way, right?
So we don't.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Because it has to benefit us. Because it's all about us, right?
That's right.
Well, yeah, Chip. I think there's a lot to explore there too. I think that, you know, another reason people can't always collaborate is because they're overwhelmed. Like, there's so much coming at us these days. All the information, all the problems, all the things we're demanding of ourselves, that people are just overwhelmed and they can't handle us, because collaboration takes more time, right? It takes more effort, and you know, people are tugging at me already, and I have to have boundaries.
Yeah, and it strikes me too that even if you had the time and the desire, there's a skill involved, and that's not the same skill that got you this job. So you're hired for a job because you're good at something, and you're in that job expected to perform on that thing. And so this collaboration, I mean, you'd have to work at it for a while, just like anything else, to be really good at it. And so where's the laboratory, the safe place, the classroom for collaboration, where you can figure out how to do it and try some things out and fail at it and feel like the stakes are low enough that it's no big deal, because you're just here to kind of get better at it. It seems like instead what happens is you have to go from mastering one thing to suddenly trying your hand at a high stakes collaborative effort, and the chances of that going well, to me, it just doesn't seem that high.
You know, I really don't appreciate how you guys are muddying this whole thing up with all the complexities of it. You know, can't we just keep it simple and say collaboration good, everything else bad? You know, collaboration all the time. No, Ken, that's great. You know, there's so much in there to explore, you know. But Chip, I'm going to let you, I don't want to jump on it, because I'm sure you have thoughts too.
Well, I think it's that it is complicated. It is complicated, and it's you know, it was from the beginning of the podcast. I have a fear that we'll use this as sort of it becomes pejorative. It becomes, you know, collaborators are good and non-collaborators are bad. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, I mean, I was a pastor for 20 years. There were so many things that people asked me to do. I could never do them all. I mean, things outside of my church and my responsibilities to my church.
Right.
And so it's you know, where's the criteria for deciding what you're going to do that's, quote, extra? Mm-hmm. And it's possible, and I've seen it over and over again, that people will just, they go to all these sort of community meetings and groups and things, and then they don't do their job, you know, that Ken was saying, you know, that's what they were trained for and hired for, and so forth. And so that's not good either, right? You know, that doesn't work, because then they lose their whole foundation from which they can collaborate. Right. So it's a tension. It's a tension I don't think we can resolve, that we have to. But so all that being said, it's still not on the radar. It's still not something that people know about. It's still not a viable option. Yeah. It's still not something, you know, that we probably ask ourselves enough is, how can I collaborate? I'm not sure what it looks like in a for-profit setting.
Yeah.
You know, that what's that like? I mean, where do you find you almost have to choose collaborative projects and relationships that in some way either build the brand or the bottom line of the company. That's why you're there.
You do. And I want to pick on a couple of things you said, not pick on, but I want to pick apart a couple of things. One is, you said that the skills that got us to where we aren't often the collaborative skills, right? Or there are other skills. And that's true. You know, when you rise into to the leadership, and when you rise into more advanced positions, there's more typically more collaboration and teamwork required. And so what, you know, what got you there ain't going to get you to the next step is a sense of it. And, but the other side of it is that I think we alluded to this earlier, is that it's harder to see the person's results from collaboration. It's more invisible. And we, organizations on the whole still reward individual performance. It's easier to see, it's easier to measure, it's under their control. And it's easy, you know, but the people who work with collaborators sure appreciate them. And what happens is Robert Cross is a guy who studies social networks in organizations, and he quantifies them and has done a tremendous amount of research in there. He's at the University of Virginia. He's found that 20 to 35% of the collaboration that occurs in large organizations, the effective value-added collaboration, comes from 3 to 5% of the people. And then what happens is they get overwhelmed because they're great collaborators. So everybody starts going to them, right? And they need them. And so pretty soon they're a bottleneck and they get bogged down because there aren't the boundaries, there aren't limits, there are no ways of choosing, you're expected to do it. And then collaboration becomes a problem in the organization as opposed to the benefit of it.
Sure, and that's easy to see how that could happen in a situation where this person's supposed to be also keeping their job going and responsible for right. what they're doing. And I think what you said is true not only at the individual level inside a company, like get your job done, don't just collaborate all day, we can't reward that or measure that. It's also true among organizations. If three or four organizations get together and now they're after this bigger vision, well, what happened to the vision that they had that was the smaller right. vision that they are supposed to be accountable for, that they are measuring.
Right.
And now this may not line up so well with that. And so the constituents that are, you know, stakeholders in the organization may have some feelings about the fact that, you know, we contributed for A and you're busy doing B.
Right.
And we
yeah.
can't even measure that. So what impact is that having? It's all getting...
I hired you to be a programmer and here you are giving counseling sessions to people all day long.
Right. Yeah. So it brings up, I think, one of the things that I appreciated in this article that you mentioned, Chip, this collective impact article from Stanford, because yep. they gave the four things that are necessary for making collaboration work. And the fifth one was that that you might need actually a support organization. An organization that's whole job in the collaboration is maintaining the collaboration itself, that there is actually one organization just there for communication, leadership, getting the vision out there, making sure everyone's on the same team, and that this has its own set of skills and its own sort of role to play, which might explain why these collaborations among organizations are not so successful most of the time, because, you know, they lack that supporting structure. Like someone's waking up at the beginning of the day saying, I know what I'm doing. My job is the collaboration itself.
Yeah. And I think there's a number of examples actually of those kind of groups, that kind of leadership. I mean, and there's industry groups that are trade associations that in a lot of ways serve that function, and they will pull an industry together, to lobby for a certain kind of legislation or that kind of thing. So it's around a part, it's around a problem, but that affects a whole group of companies, but it's driven by a neutral party in a sense. Yeah. And that's an example of it. There's a CEO peer community called Vistage that gets CEOs of small companies together to talk about their businesses. And generally they probably make it a safe place where, you know, you're not going to be with a competitor. There can only be one party from any given industry. But then they get together, they build community. It's really a community of praxis from before, but that can lead to collaboration. And it's one that that could maybe address some of that. But you have a neutral party, the leader of that chapter, who gets people together, sets the agenda, can play referee as necessary. And again, that's the same thing. And really, the New York City Leadership Center, we serve as that in the city for a lot of the faith-based organizations that get together here. That's our role. That's our contribution. Sometimes it's hard to explain, but once you drill into it a little bit, it makes sense that there needs to be somebody that really doesn't, you know, they're not trying to win, so to speak, through right. this collaboration. Their win is seeing the group collaborate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I thought that was a great idea. And by the way, I'm going to raise my hand to be one of those people or organizations that will do that. So anybody out there that was looking to form collaborations on something important, I'll be your backbone. You know, I'll help with that. That's a great thing. You know, it strikes me here that in Baltimore County, Leadership Baltimore County is an organization like that. They train leaders from all different organizations, and so it's a big, you know, cohort program, and they come together and then they help each other after the program. And so they're serving a need, you know, an organizational need, and they're serving a community need to rise up leaders and to train them where any one organization might not have the resources to do that and give them a greater vision. And that's, you know, that kind of falls in that, maybe in that realm as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It does. Yeah.
So Chip, as that role, can you just give us a little bit of like what that role is like to play and what makes it successful and what you're really about when you're doing that?
Well, let's use a specific example. We, one of the issues where there's a need in New York City is for office space for faith-based nonprofits and startup churches. Everybody has a space is at a premium here. And historically, there was a large national nonprofit that provided some space at below market rates, and they recently left the city. So we have a problem. You know, we have a lack of space, and that's even more acute because this provider has left. And so, you know, the whole thing begins with saying, what's the issue? You know, what's the pain point? What's the problem? Here it's a lack of below market space for faith-based nonprofits. And so we then reached out to some other key. Second step is reach out to key leaders. Collaboration only really works, true collaboration between decision makers. You can't have a CEO from one organization and somebody that's 18 levels down on the food chain somewhere else. There has to be a parity in terms of the authority of the people you're bringing together for a host of reasons. But at the end of the day, you know, they need to go back to their constituencies and make decisions that will drive the collaborative. So the second step is to convene leaders and say, you know, here's this challenge. We think we could do something about this together. What do you think? You know, and it's really I don't know whether you call these a focus group or an exploratory meeting, but it's, you're not collaborating. You're just getting some potential players together. And they're vetted, they're real players, and then you're gauging interest. And then the third step then is to formalize that into, whether it's written down or not, you know, we have this problem and we're going to work on this project together, and we're going to go after that. And that's, you know, that's in this case for space, of the need for space, all that developed, and then the group decided that the best thing to do is to hire an executive director to drive that project, which is really interesting because that person is the employee of the group. They're not, you know, they're not beholden to any one organization. They really, in a sense, I mean, it's not the right term in it perhaps, but they're owned by the group. And they really, in a sense, symbolize their collaborative effort. And then, you know, after you've organized and you have this project plan and you've dealt with the issue of capacity, which in this case we hired an executive director, then you release them and they do it. And the group of leaders meets on some sort of regular basis. That's important as well. And if they only meet a couple times a year, it's not really going to cut it. We usually will intersperse a mix of live meetings and phone meetings. It makes it easier for everybody. But you need a live. I think you need to, especially at the beginning stages, face-to-face interaction where people get to share their background and, you know, what their drivers are, what their deliverables are they're looking for. It's really important to sort of build a relational understanding for the thing. And then, you know, in this case, the goal and the hope is that a new 501(c) will be launched and or for-profit corporation that will actually own and rent property to faith-based nonprofits in the city. So that's, you know, there's an end game, and there's a goal. It's not necessarily this specific launch group that's searching for property, finding a solution won't necessarily last forever, but it'll transition into a more permanent entity. So there's an end zone, so to speak, or finish line for this, which I think that's important too. I mean, sitting down with a group of people and say we're just going to collaborate with each other for forever is probably not very compelling.
Right.
You know, it's like whenever we get involved militarily overseas, somebody always says, what's the exit strategy?
Right.
And so that's part of it too.
Yeah. So you've really traced the life cycle in that example of a collaboration, people coming together, identifying a problem. What are we going to do? Coming up with a strategy among a team of leaders, formalizing that organization so that someone's in charge, you have roles and responsibilities, and people know what they need to do to contribute. And then finally, at some point, institutionalizing the actual collaboration in this point. I mean, it could dissolve, but in this case, what you envision is making an organization just for the collaboration itself so that that becomes a sustaining organization that can help fulfill this need in the city.
Right. Exactly.
I want to highlight something that you said, Chip, and just kind of crystallize it. And that was the importance of having a clear goal. If you're going to get high-level decision makers to come to something and ask for their time, they're going to have limited patience for just getting together. And they're going to want to know, why are we here? What are we trying to accomplish? Let's get this done, because they're driven to get things done and their time is very valuable. And so having those goals established, and we talked about shared agenda, shared measurement systems, and you know they're essential for getting things started and getting it moving and getting it accomplished, because they have decision-making, they have the resources, but then sustaining it, then once that stuff is created and there's a system in place, then they can hand it off to other people. But that's their role at first, I think, it seems to me.
Yeah, I think that's true.
So, Chip, it's been feels like we've covered a lot of ground with this collaborative discussion. I'm wondering if you could just speak to the person who really wants to collaborate, has a heart, has already probably identified some kind of problem that needs to be solved, but hasn't yet taken the steps that you've just outlined about, you know, gathering people together, formalizing the collaboration, you know, getting an organization behind it. Could you speak to that person who's wanting to take a step in this collaborative way? What kinds of things would you point to for them?
Let me say it this way. I think that the first thing you do is you survey your network, your landscape of people that you know, and I'd encourage you to pray about it, because there's a very high probability that there's somebody in your network that you should talk to about it, at least one. And I would get together with those people one-on-one, and I would tell them what you're thinking, and they could become the nucleus for this collaborative. And you know, they need to be decision makers, they need to be people who, you know, have some kind of capacity, either in terms of their abilities or their connections, their social capital, financial resources, you know, whatever. They need to be players. But I would talk to them one-on-one. And I back when I was serving as a pastor, you know, I recognized that the needs of or the perspective, maybe not just the needs, but the perspective of CEOs and business owners were pretty significantly different than the typical working person. And so I asked the closest one to me, we had lunch or something. Do you get to connect with other peers, that share your faith values, but also share your business, success and responsibility? And he said, no. So that was the beginnings of a stirring. And I looked through my address book, so to speak. I don't have a literal one. But I looked through my, you know, I looked through my address book, and I said, "Who else do I know that might fit this same kind of profile?" And I had coffee or lunch with several others, same need. And that was the impetus for me. I validated the need, and then I already had a core group to get together and say, "What could we do about this?" So that's what I would suggest, Ken. I think that, you know, survey your landscape. Who in your orbit would also, you know, could be not just somebody that say, yeah, it's a great idea, but they could also validate it to the point that they would participate in whatever it was. So like if in your industry, you know, you felt like, I don't know, just say, I used to run a contracting company, and just, I say, as you mixed it up with other people, you realize, you know, we just can't find good help. And there's a real need here. So you think about two or three other business owners that are in the same industry or related industry, and then, you know, maybe you find that they all have the same problem, and it would be really good if you could partner with the local technical school, and that's where it forms. But I guess I'm suggesting a really relational strategy, and time one-on-one with people, because even though you may not get that time again with them ever, you've still sort of cemented the foundation of this whole thing in a truly personal conversation.
Anything you would add to that, Mike?
I know, I like all that. I really like all that, and I think that it, you know, the interpersonal trust you speak about building is critical, and I think there is a great loneliness at the top of organizations and in their lives because there's great pressure, and I think that finding, you know, people have to believe in one another and believe they can help them. And so I think that's great advice. And I think it reminds me of the way Bill Hybels describes casting a vision, that you get your idea and then you shop it with people, and then they contribute to it and they add to it, and then it changes a little bit. But in the act of sharing it continually with people, more folks jump on board and commit to it. And it sounds a bit like that in a very relational way.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think that's an apt summary. It's good.
Yeah. Well, it feels to me like we've just laid out something that's really powerful. It gives me a lot of hope to have this conversation because I think all of us feel like around us everywhere there are big problems, problems that maybe even are not being addressed at all, or certainly not being addressed in an adequate way, whether it's homelessness in the city or problems with people just fighting at work, or big problems with either our relationally in our society or environmentally,
you know, race relations, race in Baltimore. Relations.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, there's all kinds of problems that feel just way above us, way beyond what we could do. And what I'm hearing in this conversation is with the right mindset, a mindset that includes some humility, some prayer, some recognizing that we don't have all the answers and we don't have to even have all the credit, that there's a relational strategy that can work, that involves bringing together key decision makers that can leverage their strengths, the organization, people that can strengthen each other by making contributions that would really help, and by being willing to kind of share the load and not care too much who gets the credit, these problems are actually solvable.
They are. And give people hope, because when you realize they're solvable, then you know that they can be solved, and there's hope of that your efforts matter.
Yeah, it certainly opens up a whole new range of possibilities for progress in the face of really challenging problems and deeply seated dysfunction.
Well, Chip, we are super happy that you are doing this work in New York City. And I have myself wondering who's going to do it here in Baltimore. We would love to keep in touch with you and bring you back in a few months or a year to see where things are going with you. Because as you said, you're kind of in the really beginning stages. And we want to see what evolves and what you learn along the way and to hear all the great news from you. So will you come back to talk with us again?
If you guys are nice.
Do I have to send you a real address book? Because you mentioned you don't have a real address book.
It's all digital.
I think you could just send him a beer, then he would be fine.
As long as it's not a Budweiser.
In light of our conversation on collaboration, I'm wondering, what would be the best way to get this beer to you? Would it be a collaborative thing where I could, like, you know, hand it to the guy next door and he can hand it to the guy next door and we could all get it up to you up there in New York? Or should I just ship it out to you myself?
I think, Mike, there's an app for that.
Like everything in New York City, there's an app for that. Well, thanks very much, Chip, for being with us. We really appreciate
your contribution. Thank you guys for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to WorkWise. For this episode, you'll definitely want to check out our show notes for the links to the articles, books, and resources we just talked about. We didn't mention it during our discussion, but you'll also find a link to my article on coactive creativity that might help if you're collaborating on a creative task with a client or coworker. You can reach Mike at credoconsulting.us, Chip is at nycleadership.com, and you can see my team's work at accentinteractive.com.